Have we come a long way?
We've come a very long way with very little show for it, but we're like, we've come a long way. It's not, we don't have like all of these things that we can pass out and hand out and
lots of printed prototypes.
I'm trying to think if there's, okay, so like physical things aren't, you know, aren't going to be our handouts, but could you do a TED talk about board game design tomorrow?
No.
Okay. All right. We haven't come very far. We're still getting there.
More because I think I wouldn't call myself an expert in the field, and TED Talks are often done by experts in their field.
Yeah. Season 6?
Let's see how season 2 goes.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't keep our paddles up. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. Yeah, we're a pickleball podcast now.
It's not the direction I thought this episode was going to go.
Well, I was thinking about misplays from the week, and I've been playing a fair amount of pickleball. You got to keep your paddle up. Put your paddle down, you're going to get the ball slammed against you.
Is that like a viable way of scoring points in pickleball? Because that would be a whole different level of interest to me.
Yeah, I mean, at the rec level, you hit the ball at somebody. You know the person you're playing against won't be able to get their paddle there in time. But if you're playing against professionals, you wouldn't do that. They would just get out of the way and the ball would probably go out of bounds.
They're professional pickleball players.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they have, most have day jobs, but yeah, there's pro pickleball. I mean, not there yet.
There's got to be like a Netflix documentary about it, I'm sure.
There's the tennis one, but there's no pickleball yet. One day.
Give it time.
Season 3. So if we're not a pickleball podcast, even though I'd very much would like to be at this point, where are we?
Is it panic mode now?
No, I don't think it is.
I think we're more on track than we were last show.
Yes.
The power of meetings.
Yeah. Talking to the team, getting ideas, getting feedback, seeing how people feel.
So more precisely, we have two games that we're kind of narrowing in on for the season 2 launch.
Two shows left. We've got two games. Is it too much pressure though? So panic versus pressure. I think they're different. I'm definitely feeling the pressure. And I think we could build either one of these games and be successful. And success being a game that we enjoy playing and something that we can get the crowdfunding. As much as we're going to lock in on one of these games, I also know they're going to change. I even think dramatically from the time we go all in on it. Depths is a game that we're going to talk about that is about submarines and treasure. But I mean, by the end of it, it could be airplanes and zombies. I think Animal Kingdom is a game that will still be animals, but maybe all the mechanics are different. I think that is the part of it that I think I'm most E-word about. I'm most excited about, using the big words. Because I think the ideas we have right now, they're like, good. They're like, yeah, I enjoy, that's cool. But I think when we really put the time into it as a team and we spend 3 episodes or we spend 4 weeks trying to figure out the best way to start the game, whether that's a draft or it's a Rochester draft or, you know, there's a store and you buy the items. I'm really looking forward to doing that, like really honing in on like the details of the game. Because I don't think it's necessarily going to be exactly what we're seeing right now. Well, that's 100% true. It's not going to be. It'll be better.
I agree. I think the personally most interesting part to me about committing to one specific game is getting a chance to sit down in groups and dig our teeth into what the game will become based on the framework that we start with. I wrote this month's newsletter.
Love it, by the way.
And one of the things that I look back on as I think about the way that I have thought about participating in designing games is, and I've said it before, I never wanted to be the person in the room sitting by myself feverishly building a game because that's just not how my mind works. And on the other hand, I had a little bit of an illusion, a delusion, a misunderstanding about what your vision was in comparison to what my vision was. And there were points early on in the project where I was like, oh, we are going to generate the concept. We are going to be like, the concept would be ours. And I'm very, because I wasn't sure if we were going to get other people to buy in to work with us. And now, having gone to our most recent meeting, I took a lot of solace in Colacoma's statement of, you know, Animal Kingdom can be a great game. Depths can be a great game. It feels much lighter to set down the, oh, it should have been a concept that came from us, because we have these two really interesting, engaging concepts from Peter and Ryan. And getting to set down the weight of the personal creativity responsibility has made me a lot more optimistic about going into season two. So we buried the lead a little bit. We are going to be talking about Depths and Animal Kingdom as the games that kind of have emerged from the group process for developing into season two.
Before we go into that, before we start, this week's episode is brought to you by Rebel Raptor Games. Rebel Raptor Games is a new indie board game publisher focusing on making games that are perfect for kids and new players, but is just as fun for seasoned gamers. Their first game, Raising Rabbits, launches on Kickstarter this March 2025. Aaron from Rebel Raptor Games is someone who followed our Instagram very early and reached out to us, and I'm thrilled their game is making its way to Kickstarter, and we hope to be able to talk to them in a future show, season two. Follow them on Instagram at rebelraptor.games or visit rebelraptor.com to join their mailing list for exclusive updates. What are we working on?
We're in decision-making process.
I feel like we need a quick 1 to 2 minute story that shows our path to get to where we're at right now, where we're going to talk about Animal Kingdom in depths. There's going to be a couple of listeners who haven't heard the show before. There's going to be a couple of people who stopped listening when Supermarket Game didn't make it as far as they wanted, right? There's like, oh, they're not going to do Supermarket Game. I'm not going to listen anymore. There are also going to be people who go, what happened to Dating Game and how come they're not making Nightmare Smashers? Give a 1 to 2 minute story that takes us from kind of game to game and how we got here.
Once upon a time, Jason and Mark started recording a podcast. We decided we were going to build a board game. We didn't know what it was going to take to build a board game. And so we thought we would just sit down and start building a game and record and tell the story of how we built the game. We built games like Word Warpers and Mark versus Jason. We had Supermarket Game and MMA Gauntlet.
Nightmare Smashers too.
Nightmare Smashers was an exercise right at the moment when multiple people were starting to join to work with us. And we came at Nightmare Smashers from Jason designed a version and Peter designed a version and I designed a version. From there, the rest of the team kind of stepped in and we put out a wider call for we need more games. And then we had a ton of games. We had Misplay Mountain. We had Misplay Mountain Redux. We had Two Wolves. You had Succession from Scott. Dating Game early on. And then we started working within that kind of framework of we're working with a team. Here are the games that we've been looking at. We as a team met and went through some of the games. We tried working on multiple versions of Succession, and then these other games emerged. I'm So Bad's version of Trick-Taking Game for Tricksters emerged from that. Animal Kingdom came from that. You had some mashup of Two Wolves and Succession. So it's been a winding path in the games that we've been looking at, because what we've really had to do is we've had to quest for what is the game going to be, and we're still not there yet.
And so that takes us to today, where the two games that have the most amount of traction, the most amount of work put into them, and games that we think would probably be viable for our project, Animal Kingdom and Depths.
Let's work backwards. We just did a playtest of Animal Kingdom with the first prototype build this past Wednesday at our team meeting. Jason, why don't you give us the synopsis for Animal Kingdom?
In Animal Kingdom, it's election season, and you're going to play the role of an animal that is vying for the most votes to be in charge of the jungle. And you're going to position yourself by taking stances, like a hard stance or soft stance. We've carried over some of that political terminology into the game where, you know, you even have voters who are leaning towards somebody or they're likely to vote for somebody, and you can play opposition attacks on other players. We call them hippo cards in the game. And you are going to try to position yourself in a way that you get the most votes from the different types of animals that are in the center of the game. And the game starts with, you know, X amount of animals, and then slowly you introduce and add more animals as the game goes on. You're playing against the other players, and you are either taking a soft stance and saying something along the lines like, I would be the best candidate for swimming animals. And then all of the swimming animals in the center would lean towards you and they'd come like onto your playmat. And then other players will have the opportunity to either take stances and pull things out of the center or play hippo attacks on you and make those swimming animals go away from me and be less likely to vote for me. And the winner of the game is the person who has the most votes. And this, the idea for this game, as much as we, you know, I know we talked about it on the last podcast where we set out to make a succession game. And this game, although not a succession game, came from all of those conversations. This game would not have happened. And I have to give credit to our friend Ryan and his partner Sarah, because I reached out to them and I said, I want to make a political succession game. And they said, too soon, can't do it. We're not touching politics. But then they thought about some more, like, we can do this in a fun way. We can teach people about animals and, you know, teach people about elections a little bit and have some fun with it. And so they actually spent the most amount of time coming up with all of the core concepts that we have for the game right now.
So with that as the framework for where the game comes from, a little bit about how it works, we just play tested it.
Yes.
What were the learnings from the playtests that we've done for Animal Kingdom?
There's a lot, and that's great. I think that that's a really good sign, is that as we played the game, we were making notes, keeping track of the things that, you know, we would change or make more fun or this doesn't work. The first thing that we did was, all of the animals have a set of attributes. We reduced it. We made it really simple. We just took two things and we played the game with just those two attributes, just so, because I think some of us thought, well, it might be a little overwhelming trying to do all of that, you know, to look at a card and see all of these different categories for an animal. So for example, for the Arctic fox, its size was small, it's nocturnal, its movement is running, it's a cold weather animal. Its special ability was to be stealthy, and its predator was a wolf. So there's a lot of information. So for the first playtest, we did try to simplify that. We only put a couple of those things and played the game. And interestingly enough, like, it played. The game worked. It functioned. It wasn't terribly interesting because you're kind of only choosing between these two things. And we noticed that when you would play opposition, the hippo cards on, you know, if you're doing it on small animals, you know, it's a lot of the animals right now in the game. And those are the only things you could do. So there wasn't a lot of like diversity in the actions because we took out the cards that talked about being nocturnal. We didn't play with that. So those cards weren't in the game. So the first thing we learned was it works. The game is playable. And I think there's so much space in this game where you can make interesting decisions that the next step for us is to, okay, let's put all the information on the cards and then give that another try. And that's what we're going to be doing in our third play test this upcoming week. And I want to give a shout out to Peter first for making the original version that we've been playing on playingcards.io that allowed us to play test. And Mark, playingcards.io has been fantastic.
It's been a good find.
I think we all felt Tabletop Simulator was a little overwhelming, wasn't quite what we wanted. Playingcards.io has been like fantastic. Even I created a game. I made my Misplay Redux version of a game in like 10 minutes. And Mike C has been creating Plunder in playingcards.io for us to play test virtually, because he's had his local group playing it, but now some of us have been playing. But I mention it because, and if you go to our Instagram right now, you'll see it. Scott has done some amazing work in playingcards.io for our next run through of Animal Kingdom. Scott actually looked at the cards and said, while he was playing the first time, he's like, this is overwhelming. There's just like, even with the limited stuff we were putting on there, it's like, there's a lot to have to read and look at. You know, I would like, you know, more iconography. I'd like more images. And man, I didn't even know it was possible in playing cards that I owe to do what Scott has done. He's created like a professional looking board game as our playtest. I feel like if we did nothing else, we ended the podcast season one over. We created something, Mark. Now, we did very little of that part.
Print and play.
You know, we inspired people. But what he's created in playingcards.io is really cool. So I'm excited for the next playtest where we're gonna learn a lot more about the game. We learned some things about, like, here's an example from the first playtest, Mark. Initially, we just had a center area. And then you'd have a space in front of you and you'd take your stance and the animals would just come over to you. But that didn't actually, then it was like the original rules were like, well, they're going to be in front of you for two rounds and then you can bank them. Well, keeping track of that was really hard. And that's where we came up with the idea for, well, in front of you, it should be leans. That's where they go first. And then your next turn, they go to likely. So they move. If you imagine you have a little tableau in front of you or a little board in front of you. So they start there and then they move. They physically move. That was one of the things that came from the first playtest was like, oh, that's a brilliant idea. And even the language, likely and leans. You played it. You got a chance to play it, Mark. You played in our second playtest. What were your thoughts? Because we actually haven't had that conversation yet.
I want to see how it plays with the wider set of categories. It felt incredibly swingy in the first playtest that I got to sit in on. And I want to see more rounds because I'd like to see more how hard stances become relevant, which isn't something that we got to see as much when I got to play. How the opposition cards are timed in a way that makes the decisions interesting. I think there are a lot of really interesting decisions to be had, but since our playtest was relatively short in the number of rounds that we played, it felt very much like the pattern was, I call this subset to my field, I get six cards on my thing, a couple turns later, someone's like, ah, time to take those, and so you take those, and then they move. So I know that large numbers of animals moving at a time isn't the intended target for how many things move at a time, and so once we have the expanded vocabulary for the game, I'm curious to see how more of the moving pieces will come into play. Because it was hard for me to look past how swingy it felt when in sure. The short amount of time that we played.
Yeah, no question. That was definitely something that, you know, we were thinking about. But it was interesting to me that we were still planning strategy around it. Even though it was a little swingy, we were thinking about what turns would it be best for us to play certain cards. And we should hold on to this one because it's going to be really powerful two turns from now.
Yeah, I think banking things when you have the opportunity is going to be an undervalued action. I don't remember what the final counts were, but I was like watching as Peter banked small numbers of animals and was like, oh, he has a substantial lead in where,
right,
in where we were. So I think banking will be one of those things that we'll have to find a way to make it more fun because I don't think banking is what's going to be the fun part of the game, but it is how you're going to progress to your winning state.
And another thing that came up in the playtesting, especially in your version, was that end state of the game where, okay, there's a bunch of animals left over in the center. Now we need to see who are they more likely to vote for or who could even attempt to roll on them. Because if there was a small animal and you didn't take a hard stance on small animals, well, they're not available to you. They're available to somebody else. And one of the things that I saw in the playtest was for the like first five that we did, they didn't go to anybody. Nobody rolled high enough to pull them over. And I think one of the things we'll have to think about is like, what is the reality in the real world, right? In those situations, you're like, what percentage of people don't vote? And try to like figure it out. Like if it's five cards and we say, well, you know, three of those people won't vote, then we want to make sure that at least two of those cards go to somebody, right? We don't want a situation where too many cards are not being counted.
And without getting too deep into it, there was a lot of discussion about just reworking that entire rolling thing.
Right. Yeah. But again, that's the part that I'm like, that's cool. I hope it's completely different. I want it to be completely different because I think when we're all working on it, we can make it something pretty cool, fun to play. The other game that we are playtesting still is Depths. Give us a short synopsis of Depths, kind of where that came from and, you know, how the game plays.
Depths is a 3 to 5 person deep sea explorer. You're going to have your submarine and your crew, and you're going to race other crews and submarines down into, I think Peter calls it the Marinus Trench, looking for treasure. And so you'll be racing to get to sites, you'll battle monsters for treasure, you'll collect that treasure, and then you're going to race back to the surface to cash out your loot, all the while trying to avoid piracy from your opponents. There are ways of customizing and upgrading your ship in this game. There are a lot of like, I guess I would describe them as like mini games, but there are a lot of like there are a lot of different phases of this game. And so the turns will have a lot of variety to them, I think, which is one of the things I find compelling about it. Those four phases are called Descent, Explore, Ascent, and Debrief. And so at each phase, you're kind of moving to the different decisions that you're going to have to make as you navigate, trying to maximize your, as you try to race to complete the win conditions. The win conditions currently are all key treasures are collected, a player submarine gains an 1/8 point of corruption, or the submarine captains agree during debrief to end the mission. And so there are multiple paths for the game to end. And part of the reason why we're talking about Depths in Animal Kingdom today is, again, they've had the most work and time and progress on these two games. And so there was also a playtest or two of Depths. Take us through the playtest because I wasn't available for it.
Yeah, so I was there for the playtest of Depths and got to play it. And I will start by telling you the thing that I was most into was upgrading my ship. I like that aspect of games where you start with something basic and then you can make it stronger and better. Like Animal Kingdom, I can see a path forward where you get to do some really interesting things. And I think that's a really good opportunity for a game. For me, games that I enjoy playing, where I have a lot of choices about what my character, my sub can do that's different than what someone else is trying to do. And so being able to change your ship to either go faster or to put on a stronger hull or to, you know, raise more money through funding and, you know, all the different ways that you can customize your ship where that was the really interesting piece to me, which is why I said earlier in the show, I'm like, maybe it's about airplanes and zombies later on. As long as I still get to, you know, make my airplane the way I want it, that's the part of the game that I really liked.
You've also said before, though, that the flavor of Depths actually was one of the compelling things for you. So I don't know that I would advocate for changing to airplane zombies.
Yeah, I've kind of gone full circle on that, right? I've either done a 180 or a 360 at math. So that was a part of the game that I really liked. One of the things that came from our playtest that we realized, it was that the movement of your ship up or down, the way it was originally set up on these hexagons, really didn't matter. You know, who got to go first or who got to go second, because there were very few ways for us to actually interact on the way back up. Though I'm So Bad did try to attack my ship once, but I roll really well. I was able to keep them out of my hull, keep my own treasures. So that's one of the pieces that I'm looking forward to on our next playtest, seeing how does the movement now work? Because it wasn't something that really functioned. And, you know, Peter right away is like, it's not what I want it to be. You know, we'll keep working on that.
Yeah, and that's outlined in one of his upcoming changes for when I was reading the debrief notes. He was like, the hexagon thing is going to go and it's going to move to a more abstract kind of move where you select your site. And then if there's some kind of competition for arriving at the site, it'll be based on if there's some kind of competition for that site, the conflict will be resolved by ship speed or by some other metric.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if you can, like, if we all flipped a card over at the same time to indicate what we want our destination to be, and then there was like some sort of order to resolve it. I wonder if that's interesting. Just got me thinking. So looking forward to whatever it is.
Did you get to fight monsters in the playtest? That was one of the other things that was kind of highlighted for updates.
I did. But, you know, at its base version right now, you were essentially just, you know, rolling a die. The monster's level is 4. Your level is 7. You got to roll a die. If you roll higher than a 4, you beat them. If they roll higher than a 7, they damage your hull. That piece was, I think it functions for a playtest. I don't want that to be the way the game works. But I think for a playtest, that's fine. I think that's not the thing you're testing at the moment. You know, you would do a whole separate playtest for just trying to figure out the ways that you can make the combat interesting and involve, you know, critical decision making. But the worst, you had choices. That was kind of an interesting piece of it was, okay, so I beat the first monster. There were always like two or three monsters grouped up. Mm-hmm. And you had a decision. You could try to fight the next one, or you can just take the treasure that you got already and turn your sub around and go back. So you kind of had that choice, like, do I risk it? Do I keep going? Do I feel lucky with my die? And then there were things that you would do when you got back up to the surface to increase your probability of winning die rolls.
Okay. Yeah, those are like ship upgrade types of things, right? So the other big like thing that was in the notes that I was looking over for upcoming changes was also a revision of how treasures functioned. I think like they're moving treasures to money, to some kind of currency in the game, but then maintaining the key treasures for completing the win conditions looked like how it was going to update for the next time that we play. And then there was also a little bit of a note about having treasures become more beneficial to specific players or specific factions to encourage a little bit more player interaction in the ascent phase to encourage a little more piracy.
Yeah.
It's really interesting I think it's really cool now having seen, and personally like having tried this a little bit, right? Like in our early games, like we made very simple games that we could just like print out on paper and play with. It's really interesting to see a more developed, more complex version of what we were trying to do when we were starting, because even now, like creating something on that scale of Animal Kingdom or on the scale of Depths is still a little bit hard for me to conceptualize. But it's cool to see, like I can look back at like, oh, this is how I made MMA Gauntlet. And I can see like how that could expand into something more complex and more interesting.
There's a world where if you had said to me right now, Jason, I'm not going to continue the podcast, I'm out, no season two unless we did MMA Gauntlet, I would say yes. I would do it. I still feel like we were at that time, we talked about the path a little bit earlier, the story. At that time, it was really just you and I. We did share that idea with other people. But if we understood playingcards.io back then, we could make MMA Gauntlet and a half an hour and have it up and people could be playtesting it. And it would be really interesting to get people's feedback on that game and to see where that could go.
Maybe it'll just be a behind the scenes thing for season two.
Maybe.
What's next?
Well, I think people want us to pick a board game. I think they want us to come on the podcast and say in 2 weeks, this is the game we're making. We might do that. But next week, I think it's going to be a really fun show, a year in review. We're going to share the things that we've learned, tell stories that maybe we haven't shared yet as we look forward to season two. And I think, so we're going to go back, we're going to think about, you know, what are the things that we've learned along the way, right? I don't want to sound like a trope, but what are the things that we have learned? So I asked you earlier, Mark, give a TED talk. Can you do it on what you've learned this year about board game design? Can you do it? Your answer was,
no.
Yeah, no, neither could I. But I think if we spent the next week or so just like really thinking about what are the things that we've learned about board game design, whether that was from Leonie, who was on the show with Biome, maybe it was our conversations at Gen Con with the creators of Once Upon a Galaxy. Maybe it's what we've learned from working with a team and getting ideas and feedback on our ideas. So we're going to do a year in review.
I think it will be a fun episode.
Mark, I'm going to jump in because I know you're ready to do your final thing. But before you give a shout out to our Patreon subscribers, I just want to let them know and the audience know that we have carried over tradition from our previous show where we always gave our December Patreon revenue directly to a charity. And This month, we are making a donation with our Patreon revenue to the Tabletop Alliance. They're a nonprofit organization that empowers educators and community leaders to use tabletop games as tools for learning, social engagement, and skill development.
The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. You really can't let go of Tuckman.
You snuck Tuckman. Wasn't even me.
Snuckman.
Snuckman. Oh, that's clever.